A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on January 12, 1992, in the series God With Us, entitled In the One Light That Enlightens All. The scripture readings are Isaiah 60, verses 1 through 3, and John 1, verses 1 through 14. The texts for the sermon are Isaiah 60, verses 1 and 3, and John 1, verse 9. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
It is Epiphany, and in case you missed it this morning, the theme is light. The star, with its radiance, led the Magi, the questing Gentiles, to the adoration of the Christ child. The star, a symbol of light, the light to the nations, that light which was now in Jesus to break out of the narrow confines of that old covenant with Israel, in order that that light might embrace all peoples and the revelation of God be brought to all. The idea of light, however, was not something that dawned with Jesus, for in the Old Testament, in the Hebrew understanding of God, God was light. And John's first chapter is paralleled after the first chapter of Genesis. In the beginning, God, and the first creative act of God was to create light. And the psalmist said of God, that which was characteristic of Old Testament faith and devotion, Thou art the fountain of life, and in Thy light we see light. And not only did Israel understand God to be light, but it understood itself to be called to be light to the world, to the nations. The Old Testament text from Isaiah, the 60th chapter, Arise, shine, your light has come. And nations will march to you. The light of God, the revelation of God will be located in Mount Zion, and the world will flow to Mount Zion in order to have access to the light. So, light. God is light, and God's people is light, was a common, familiar Old Testament motif. And then we have, from the womb of Israel, the child born, Jesus. And when John would tell the story of Jesus, John begins, in the beginning was the Word, and so forth. In Him was life, and the life was the light of humankind. And then John the Baptist came to bear witness to that light. This was the real light, says John. This was the true light that enlightens everyone that was coming into the world. And so we have the light that was to be located in Zion, in the conception of Israel, to be light now in this Word made flesh, who will bring light to all peoples. Jesus, in John's Gospel, says, I am the light of the world. And now we have, 2,000 years later, two faith communities, Judaism and Christianity. The Jewish church and the Christian church. And both of them understand that God is light. And both of them understand that the light of God in them is a light for the nations, for the world. And we have 2,000 years later, two faith communities, both of which worship the same God, both of which claim a revelation from that one God. Both of them in their orthodox traditions, exclusive of the other. How do you put that together? God is light. Israel believed God is light, and that it was called to be light. And out of Israel, Jesus is born, and Jesus said, I am the light of the world. And the Christian church, unfortunately, in that separation from the temple and from Judaism, unfortunately, becomes another faith community. Now both of them pointing to the same God, both of them understanding God is light, both of them would be light to the world, but both of them, if they would be true to their orthodox tradition, would have to exclude the other. Well, in this season of Epiphany, when we think about the coming of light and the revelation of the one true God, I want to reflect with you for a few moments on that relationship between these two faith communities, because I think it might help us to understand our own relationship to the light of God and to the grace of God. I had my own epiphany moment a few months ago in Muskegon, an interfaith dialogue to which I have referred a time or two. There, the question of the discussion between Christianity and Judaism was no longer an abstract, a theological debate, but it became a discussion between two warm, committed, devoted believers of their respective faith communities. Christer Stendahl, New Testament scholar, David Hartman, rabbi from Jerusalem, out of the Orthodox tradition. These two men, in a very ironic and very friendly and warm discussion throughout the day, made excellent presentations and thoughtful response. And then in the evening, it was the audience's opportunity to put their questions to these two men who had so thoughtfully reflected with each other throughout the day. And finally, in the midst of the questioning, we got to the question. Someone said, Dr. Stendahl, in your counsel that we be open to the other and even open to the other whose faith commitment is perhaps antithetical to our own, how do you redefine evangelism in such a world? And Christer Stendahl, who is a very gentle man, spoke about his own posture over against other faiths or people of no faith, saying that he sought to be present to them, a ministry of presence where he bore his witness to Jesus, where he could sing with abandon his hymn to Jesus, whom he loved and in whose face he saw the one true God. That was how Christer Stendahl would have evangelism take place. But David Hartman wouldn't let it rest there. He said, but Christer, what you are talking about is a strategy of evangelism. But Christer, Why do you feel compelled to bear your witness? Do you bear your witness to me, a Jew, in order that I, a Jew, might join you as a Christian? Is there something that must happen to me in order to fulfill me and to complete me? David Hartman said, Christer, I think that's the question. Obviously, you are a gentle witness. But why must you witness to me at all? Well, that got the discussion going real good. Because that is the question. That's the core issue. And as they responded back and forth to each other, the thing that David Hartman pointed out and that Christer Stendahl agreed to was that when you have a faith community such as Judaism and a faith community such as Christianity, both of them monotheistic, therefore not being able each to have their own God, because there is one God, and both of them a community, the consequence of a revelation of that one God, and both of them having a revelation that would exclude the other unless the other would become one with the first. There you have the problem of the religions in the world. And then Hartman went on to make an eloquent plea for the religions, and in this case, Judaism and Christianity, to recognize the havoc, the evil that has been unleashed on our world by those who have claimed to have not simply truth, but the truth, and who claim to know God's plan for history. He pressed Christer Stendahl, saying, is it constitutive of being an Orthodox Jew that I must view the drama of history through these lenses, working to the end of bringing all around to this view? Is it necessary for me to say yes to my tradition, to say no to yours? Must I deny your joy in order to have my joy? Is it constitutive of our faith commitments that we cannot witness to them respectively and recognize them as multiple faith communities of the one God who transcends all faith communities and all images that derive from those communities and all images and parables and adjectives, the God, the one infinite God who is mystery, who transcends them all, but who becomes a tribal God in Revelation, who becomes a particular God in unveiling, so that in my poor, limited, groping manner through images in this limited unveiling, I nonetheless can touch at least the hem of her garment, that there might be some ray of light that is true, and grace bearing, even though I do not claim the whole field. It's not what the Old Testament says. Arise, shine, for your light has come, and the nations will march to you. Not what the New Testament says. I am the light of the world, and no one comes to the Father but by me. Is it possible that we would set our faith traditions on their head? In the spirit of something deeper in our faith traditions? Is it possible that our own revelatory document is but a narrow expression of a larger truth that perhaps 2,000 years later we can see on the basis of our human experience? Well, David Hartman said to Christer Stendahl, that's our calling. It is time for the theologian and the rabbi and the minister to begin to create that kind of spirit in a world that has been torn apart by dogmatisms and absolutisms, the absolutizing of the partial, and the exaltation and universalizing of the limited. It is time for us to be honest with our people. But, he said, if we do it, know that we will pay the price, and the day is short, and the way is long. To which Christer Stendahl said, you know, David, if we theologians and clergy people who suspect these things to be true would let our people know, we might find that our people have been there a long time before us. That maybe it is for the organized church and its institution and its leaders who have vested interest in the status quo and the absolutizing of the finite. Maybe it is for us to give up that claim, that absolute claim that brings with it power and position and prestige, and begin to pave the way for people to be able to rejoice in God without doing so at the expense of the joy of another. Enabling our people to say yes to God without building it on the negation of all else. What do you really believe? I mean, really at gut level, what do you believe? You say, well, we believe this and this and this. No, 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 no. Those are the things, the external kind of things that define our system. But what do you believe? What is the compelling vision by which you live? Otherwise, we are simply the tenets of thoughts that have been thought. As long as I am feeling I should feel this way and thinking because I should think this way. It is not what I think and what I feel. And until I think and feel my own concrete truth, I have not had my own epiphany. Epiphany is not something that happened with a magi and a star 2,000 years ago. It is when the scales fall from my eyes. And when the veil is taken from my heart. This was the true light that enlightens everyone that was coming into the world. And the world was made by him. And the world knew him not. He came to his own, and his own received him not. I don't know why. I don't know why. But as many as received him, to them gave he power to become the children of God. Born not of human will or human machination, but born of God. Has epiphany happened for you? Is it more than the recitation of certain truths that you certainly believe to be so? Has there been that moment of illumination, of enlightenment? Has your heart been strangely warmed? Have you looked into the face of Jesus and said, "My God, I see into the very heart of God"? That's our language. It's not David Hartman's language. That's our language. But as we noted last week, concretely, the Word that became flesh and dwelt among us is the Word that continues to be enfleshed in us. And so, I promise you, not from here on out for the next 25 years until I retire, but just one more time. See if there's a hand next to you somewhere. Grab it. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And the Word continues to be enfleshed in us. And we know God in the one for whom our heart longs, our neighbor. And looking into the face of the neighbor, we see reflected the face of Jesus, who is a reflection of the infinite God. Close your eyes for a moment. Dear God, be as real to us as the one on our right hand and on our left. For too long it has been true of us as well that you've come to us and we've been looking elsewhere, searching the heavens, dredging the seas. In these moments, give us an epiphany of your reality, the very touch of your grace in the one who is our neighbor. Oh God, we do believe. We rest in you through Jesus Christ. make us your children, and we shall praise you now and forever. Amen.